Why are so many relationships struggling right now? The good news is that there's an increasing body of research and proven practices designed to improve relationships of all kinds, helping us live happier, healthier, and more meaningful lives. That's why we highly encourage you to attend the 2025 Attachment, Trauma, and Toxic Relationships Super Conference, a free online event taking place from April 28th until May 4th. We're talking about brilliant doctors and master teachers such as Dr. Peter Levine, Terry Real, Dr. Richard Schwartz, Terry Cole, Dr. Arielle Schwartz, just to name a few. Day one will be identifying toxic relationships and understanding the characteristics and patterns of dysfunctional relationships. Day two will be establishing trust, safety, and healthy boundaries. Day three, breaking free from narcissism and codependency. Day four, cultivating honest and clear communication. Day five, healing relationships with self. Day six, deepening intimacy. Day seven, healing trauma in relationship. Sign up for this free event, link in the show notes. BetterHelp is the paid partner of this episode, and they are on a mission to make starting therapy easier. Therapy has been a safe space for me, where I've been able to find support and validation for my own early attachment and relational trauma patterns. It also provided the education and context to help me understand some of my responses, which led to an increased sense of self-compassion. What I love about therapy is it not only provides you with a trained therapist, it also leaves you with tools you can use on your own to support you on the healing journey. Starting therapy is easy with BetterHelp. Fill out a questionnaire and you will match with a therapist as soon as possible. One of the best features of BetterHelp is that if the first therapist doesn't feel like the right fit, you can easily switch to another one until you find someone you can easily connect with. They carefully make sure therapists on their platform are well qualified and their customer support team is there to help you if you have any questions. If you're struggling and think you'd benefit from a therapy session, go to betterhelp.com/healingtrauma during signup and get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a compassionate guide for those seeking to heal and thrive. Introducing your host, Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach and fellow traveler on the path to healing. In this podcast, we will engage in heartfelt conversation with experts in the field of trauma healing. We'll explore ways to cultivate feeling safe in our bodies and in connection to others, so that we can be present to live the life we've been given more fully and with more joy. Join us as we navigate the way towards a life restored. Introducing your host, Monique Coven.
Kelly, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I was really looking forward to this episode. I read your book, your memoir, called Saving the Lost Little Girl?
It's Saving the Lost Girl.
Saving the Lost Girl.
A memoir of healing.
Loved the book. I've read lots of memoirs before. This one really impacted me. I really related to your story. There's so much in your story. There's, I don't even like saying story because it's not a story, it's your life. One of the things I really related to was how the little girl was feeling. I could feel it in my body because I felt those things. So there's so much to talk about. I was thinking about how books that I've read in the past, memoirs, sometimes like they do talk about some stuff that's challenging and hard, but sometimes I find they wrap a little bow, or they feel like they have to wrap a little bow, like, and then it was better, the end, happily ever after, and the end, like a bow. And I just felt your book was authentic, relatable, and real. So I appreciate that. And I feel I'm honored to be able to talk to you.
I read a lot of memoirs well. The first memoir I ever read, I was 22, and it was about a woman who had spent time in foster care and the wild ride she had went on as a girl and a teenager and a young woman. But, and the whole book was fascinating, but it led up to the point, it was all headed to this big job. Like, the ending was, I got this really important job. while the book was valuable and relatable, I felt like, okay, well, I can't write a book until I get a big job. Or until I wanted to be a singer at the time. Like, I have to achieve something first, fame, or get a really big degree in order for people to think that my voice is valuable. And the irony is, I have complex PTSD, and I've not been able to achieve a lot of these things because of that.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I can't write my book. But throughout the years, I've had a lot of therapy, and I've done a lot of work on myself. And I felt like at some point, hopefully just surviving it would be enough, being able to tell it would be enough. My husband would challenge me, say, you know, you think you need to go get this big college degree, but maybe that's just another way of putting it off.
Yes. I think what you're saying is so true. And that's a little bit of what I meant about the bow. It's almost like we have to establish something to prove that our voice is worth to the world being heard. And it's sad that we have to do that, but I get it. I think we all feel that way. And so your book is really, I felt it was just that. It was such a refreshing surprise in that, and there was nothing refreshing about it in that I'm not diminishing your pain and your, you know, what you went through, but the fact of the way that you wrote the story was as if we were just watching it, and you were speaking so truthfully and relatable and authentically, and that's what made it really relatable. So let's start a little bit with your story. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the beginning?
Yeah. So I was taken from my birth mother at 10 months old. The conditions, it's kind of like he said, she said, and then there's documents say one thing and then people in the family say another. It's a little bit of a mystery, but I know that my birth mother has schizophrenia and my birth father, they were both addicts as well. And my birth father has some mental illness as well. But I was taken from their care at 10 months old and put in foster care. And then I was with the same foster family for 10 years before we were adopted. Me and then my two sisters came with me as well.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, our foster family, our foster parents were very abusive. And the people who oversaw our case, like everyone knew. At the time, I thought, well, everyone knows this is happening, but no one's doing anything. I must be a really terrible person, a really terrible kid, because no one's helping me. I mean, we had extended adoptive family who witnessed it. Often my sisters and I would tell a friend at school and they would tell their parents. Parents would call the school and then we'd meet with the school counselor to check us for bruises, but we didn't have bruises because that's not how our parents, that wasn't their choice of violence. And then we were also threatened with, our foster parents would say, like, if you ever tell anyone, we'll make it worth it, basically. We'll give you the last beating you'll ever get, or like give you the beating of your lifetime, so to speak. Or, well, if you go somewhere else, you're going to be split up from your sisters. Do you want that? And of course, we didn't want that. And we'd also, I've been with these parents since I was a baby, and they were the only family I knew. So there was also this natural, like, desire for them to accept me and love me and be constantly working and trying to obey and be the perfect kid. I need your love, but they're also really abusive.
That's something I've heard so much with people who have been adopted. They have this fear of abandonment, which makes sense. I can imagine 10 months old and being put into this foster care and then they end up adopting you. I could imagine you had that feeling of fear of abandonment. Because your body remembers that you had a family before. You had a mother. Do you have any memory of that at all?
I remember visitations with my biological parents and then with my grandparents and aunts. And I had some cousins. Like, I know my birth parents were not great. I was terrified of them as a young child, I think. I know my birth mother I was. My birth father, not as much. Like, I was excited to see him when we'd have visitations. And I remember loving my grandparents and I loved my aunts, and I have a brother as well who was adopted and fostered by a different family. So I do have memories. Yeah.
So it sounds like your birth mother, you had some fear of her. So naturally for you to be afraid of her, something happened for you to have fear. And then your adoptive parents also being harmful that really puts you in such a bind, you know, this fear of abandonment. And yet, you know, we are designed to cling to our parents or adoptive parents after, you know, just adults to care for us. So what a bind that puts you in. And I felt that in the book.
Yeah, I definitely cling to my sisters. And we kind of, throughout our childhood, especially as teenagers, sort of raised each other very haphazardly. And we're still, I'm still trying to like not be the stand-in mother for my sisters. And that, because that really creates a lot of codependency.
Yeah, that often happens also. When we grow up in these families, we sort of take on this feeling like we're responsible for them. All the lines, it gets all like messed up if we've witnessed abuse of our siblings.
So after we were adopted, adoptive parents moved us out of state because they really didn't want us to have any contact with any of our biological family, which was really heartbreaking for them. It wasn't their desire, you know, the extended family. We had, like I said, we had aunts and grandparents and uncles and cousins. So we were removed from them, and we moved from the suburbs of Chicago to Michigan. And 2 years after that, my adopted mother passed away from cancer. We were left with our adopted father, who was in his 70s at the time and was the most unconscious person you could ever meet. I think he'd done a lot of bad things in his life, and he was just very disconnected from, he was never present. And then he began sexually assaulting my sister and I, and we were just left out there in the middle of nowhere on our own with him until we all got old enough to run away.
So how old were you when your adoptive mother passed away?
I was 12.
So you were so young. I mean, my heart, how did you feel? Because again, you know, she was the only mother that you had, and yet she was at times very harsh and abusive.
Was very sad. I mean, it was a devastating loss. I know it might be confusing for people who haven't experienced abuse, she had her good parts. I clung to those. Like, she was really funny, and she was nice clothes from JCPenney. It's like such little shallow things, but it's still something.
Yeah.
She ate for us, and she cooked for us, and she would sometimes draw pictures for us, or I don't know, she'd tell me I was pretty, but you know, you said all that against the physical abuse, and it's like, I didn't understand. I didn't understand it, but I was really heartbroken.
Yeah. Of course. She was the only mother that you knew. And like you said, you clung to the good things, which is natural. That's what we would do. In the story, you talk about the way that this family sort of operated, and they operated in a very kind of isolated way that kept you from connecting with other people, with even friends. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah. So my foster turned adoptive parents were older, so they were old enough to be our grandparents. My mom had chronic asthma, and I genuinely believe that's from some trauma, her own trauma that would get activated when she would get stressed. They just didn't have any desire to be social, and they didn't have friends. My dad would say, friends are phony, they get up in your business. And so I never saw any friends that they had. I never met a friend. I wasn't encouraged to have friends. I remember just being like my first day of kindergarten, just being dropped in a pool of people and being like shaking, like terrified. Like, what do I do? How do I talk? But all the other kids around me like knew each other and were, well, no one was as nervous as I was. But yeah, we were very isolated. They went away because my biological mother would send letters and threaten to kidnap us. And she did show up at my sister's school once. So there was fear and anxiety over that, but also just them being older, and they didn't want anyone to know that we were being abused. So I think they tried to, you know, keep those boundaries so nothing would slip. Especially after my mother died, my dad would lock up the phone so we couldn't talk to anybody and take the mouse off the computer. But we found me and my sister's phone was around it. But it was really to try to contain.
And, you know, one of the themes in your book is I was angry for you. And I know that you still obviously have issues with it. How could you not? And that's the the foster care system and the people that were supposed to be your social worker or your case manager looking after what's best for you. There were so many times where they just did not do their job. And it infuriated me as I was reading. Like, I wanted to call them up today, even though this was, I don't know how many years ago.
It was in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah. And I just like, even what you talked about when you said they had no friends, like, don't you think there would be like this huge, or there should be a huge assessment of the family that's going, for goodness sake, they do it for dogs. Like mm-hmm. my dog, they, before I adopted my dog, they came over, they checked the yard. They want to know us. For little girls who were in an abusive situation, they're going to be adopted. Do you not think that they would do a thorough investigation? Does this family have friends? What are they like? Was any of that done?
I think it was. So at the time, so the way DCFS worked then, I'm sure, I think it's similar now. There's different agencies that acquire the foster kids and then do all the vetting and all of, like, they have the social workers with a separate agency, and then they like work together with the state to oversee a case. So whoever interviewed them obviously did a terrible job. But the other thing is, my foster parents were very charming. They were, from what I remember, like when we'd have people over, my mom was always laughing and everything's funny. They knew, like, the house needs to be clean. The kids need to look well kept. We went to all of our doctor's appointments and did all, like, checked all the boxes, but no one saw what was happening when they got angry. And there was suspicion of abuse from, because my biological family, when we'd have visitations, would notice our odd behavior and we didn't want to go home and we wouldn't talk about our foster parents. And we wouldn't, they just knew, like, there were other signs as well. And my one aunt, Rita, in the book, God bless her, really, really tried to communicate that to the man who was in charge at DCFS at the time, who is named in the book. And that is his real name. He's passed away, so I felt okay using it. But he just, like she said, I called him every day or every week for a year. Oh. And he basically antagonized her and rage baited her. And they had some interest in us not leaving our foster home. And she wanted to adopt us and they wouldn't allow it. It's insane. I may have updated the transcript since the one you read, but I actually, writing this book, I learned some new things. But anyway, yeah, she fought really hard to adopt us and tried to alarm them. Like, the girls are being abused. One of their biological daughters actually called DCFS and said, I was abused as a child. And they didn't follow through with that because they said, well, she recanted her statement because she needed to borrow money. My biological aunt was like, what do you mean? Why does that matter? If they recanted their statement, it's obviously true. And they just threatened her with defamation. And it was lots of failure. And as you can imagine, for me and my sisters, like, how that, having nobody validate your experience or see you worth, and I had no idea my aunt was doing all of that.
Like, have you ever had those days where everything just feels harder than usual and you can't quite figure out why? Recently, I've learned that sometimes it's not just stress or lack of sleep. It could be my hormones at play. That's where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Just answer a few questions about what you're going through and where you're at in life. And the best part, after taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. Taking care of your hormones isn't just about feeling good right now. It's about investing in your long-term health. By taking the hormone quiz, you'll learn more about your hormone balance and can make small, intentional changes to support your body, whether it's with Hormone Harmony or another Happy Mammoth product. The quiz helps guide you towards solutions that work specifically for you. One of the best things about Hormone Harmony is how it's become such an essential part of so many women's daily routines. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. In fact, a survey found that 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw improved mood, and 100% said they felt like themselves again. Ready to start feeling like yourself again? Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free
2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order with my code HEALING at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEALING for 15% off today.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Bless her that she was just knowing that there was a family member fighting for you. Every week she would call, like, that's really something.
But there, again, it wasn't enough.
It wasn't enough. No. And you were starting to say about, like, the impact of that. What does that do?
It just completely annihilated any sense of value when you have no one has ever looked at you and said, what happened is wrong. And again, all of my adopted extended family, the grown-ups, saw us and heard us being abused all the time. And they never, like, looked at us and said, I'm sorry, this is wrong. Much less like, hey, I'm going to tell him to stop, or that's not right. There was no standing up. It was just like my dad would take us downstairs or take us into a bedroom and we would be screaming and then come out and everyone would just kind of look away.
The looking away is a huge part of the shame, because that I know it was for me. So that's why I'm saying I relate to you. When you're at your most vulnerable, everything is taken away. You're just, and then they see that and then they look away. I feel it's such a message of, well, I'm not worth it. Yeah. What I really appreciated about your book is that you talked about that, and then you talked about how it impacts you as an adult. So let's talk about that a little bit. People who've had similar experiences can get it, but I don't think everybody understands. The thought is often, well, okay, that was a really terrible childhood and you didn't deserve it. And you know it now that you're grown and you're an adult and now you have this fabulous life. You know, you're in a great house and it's safe and you've got children and everything's hunky-dory. And the truth is that little girl is still inside us.
Yeah. She's doing much better now than she was 10 years ago, mm-hmm. 5 years even. She's definitely still there. Just to give an example, the type of friends that I would be attracted to, like, who I want to be friends with this person. It would be the woman who clearly didn't want to be friends with me, or didn't text me back, or didn't show up to things, or didn't have nearly as much of an interest in my life as I had in theirs. I would find these people who made me work really hard to be in their life, and then who would betray me or not show up or stand me up. That's what felt right. And a person who was available, I couldn't feel smothered.
Yes. Boy, you're talking about attachment, really, our attachment styles. And that's what felt normal to your nervous system. And someone just wanting to be near you all the time, it was like, whoa, it's an experience in our nervous system of like, whoa, that's not normal for the nervous system. And that will say it's a threat.
When you have a lot of shame, like I did, and I didn't even know at that time. And I had a good husband and a young daughter, and I had more love and stuff in my life, but there was still a lot going on in here that was, like, I knew I could blow it all up at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Yeah. But through therapy and processing all of these things, I feel like for a year or two, I was at a standstill, like, okay, there's this particular woman that like I'm sort of friends with and I really want to reach out to her and like be friends, but why? She doesn't ever reach out to me. That she is like, there is a vibe. There's this thing about her that like I understand, like that she reminds me of my mom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thing about her that makes me like really want her approval. So, okay, we're not going to do that because we know that that's just going to leave you feeling icky. So I've been kind of like, well, who do I befriend? What kind of things are safe? Like what kind of people are safe? So for a long time, I was just like, I don't know. I don't know what to do, but yeah.
That's beautiful because what you're talking about is the healing journey. I see that with so many people that I have talked to over the years. It's like they often will have those kinds of friends that feel safe to the nervous system that in reality are not safe, but that's normal and acceptable. And it's, there's no reciprocity, which means two way. It's one way. They basically call up and say, blah, 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 blah. Okay, bye. And it's not like, you know, how are you doing? Like, it's not a nice two way thing. And when they start to realize that, as you did, that's a part of the healing journey. And then they get to a place where, okay, so like, what kind of friends? What's healthy? And then they, you know, so that's part of the healing journey. And it's when you start to realize, oh, it's give and take. And that I remember Deb Dana saying that your nervous system, when it feels like an open space, when you think of this person, or when you're around them, that's your nervous system is saying, okay, this person's safe. So I can think of some people when I would be interacting with them and I would be so constricted, you know, and so that is your body is telling you not so safe.
The hardest thing too is throughout this process, of course, you have these relationships that you've built before or that I had really close, I considered close that I made in my teens, early 20s that I still had. And throughout this process, like if I continued to hang on to these, like at some point I had to let go and that was extremely painful. I have to say in my heart, I know that any friend that I have now, any friend that I make now, I know what I need and what I desire and what I deserve as far as like follow through and keeping your word, especially with someone who has abandonment trauma. Not that my problem is everyone else's problem, but just gentleness and not being explosive. Like I can't be fearful of being cut off. There are things that I wouldn't choose a friend like that now. So it's hard to... Growing pains are really, really challenging.
That's a good word, growing pains. And I was thinking that's definitely what they call like PTSD growth. I think of myself, the same thing, like over the decades, it's part of growing. We change, we learn different things, and we have boundaries that we put in place, and it's going to continue. So Let's talk a little bit about healing. So you share in the book, you did different types of therapy, and they seemed quite helpful. Is there anything you want to share about that?
The therapist that I saw in Nashville was really fantastic. And unlike anyone I had seen before, she was trauma-focused, which was important. I didn't realize that when I first started therapy, when I was younger, having somebody for me who was specialized in, first of all, how to talk to someone who's traumatized, because I felt like she could really see me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I would sit there like terrified because I couldn't just like laugh things off like, oh, I couldn't run the session. But having, she was just amazing. And then at some point, I did write this in the book, like I realized, like, I can come in here and talk about all of these relationships and these people and what this person did to me and what that person did to me and get tools on like how to deal with them. But at some point I have to talk about myself and why, like she said, like, why are you okay with so little? What does the person have to believe about themselves to be okay with so little? And I was like,
what a question.
Then, why do you believe this about yourself? But she was just so great at always, I would veer off this way and be like, no, we're going to come back. No, we're going to come back. Or like, like I said, I was in like this standstill for a couple years of not knowing what friends to choose. So what I would do is I would meet someone and like, can't be friends with them because of this and this and this. And she's like, all right, well, let's turn the mirror around and look at yourself. And what, like, how do you feel? Like, what are you afraid of? And all of these things that I would list about another person were really areas of vulnerability, like risk to getting abandoned or hurt.
Right.
So it makes sense. I mean, you look at the child in me, but that's not sustainable. I don't want it. It's like, I want friends. I want community. At the same time, when you get it, it's like, oh my gosh, someone's going to see who I am. Yeah. And then they're going to abandon me. So there's this constant push and pull, which I've grown really tired of.
I've come to really see that we do have that child within us that was wounded and that is going to respond. I saw this video actually recently on Instagram, and I wanted to share it because it was so powerful to visually watch that. And what it was like a man and a woman. It was in a cartoon animation, and they're together in a boat and they're a couple. And then like all of a sudden they're in a boat together and she sees a bird, and then she goes, oh, look at the bird. And she becomes like a little child, her younger part. And then he does something and then he becomes this little boy. And I thought, that's exactly it. We could be in a relationship with someone and they say something, and suddenly it's our younger part of ourselves that's responding. That's what happens so much of the time. I think we think sometimes that we're going to do therapy and then that little girl's going to grow up and then we're going to be fine. And I'm not so sure that little girl's going to grow up. Maybe we have to make room for the little girl and let her know that she's safe right now, and give her some of the things that she didn't have access to, some of the resources, some comfort, some reassurance.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think the goal is learning to work together. There's a word for it. Incorporating her. I still in the marriage with my husband, bless him more than anyone else. It's so hard because he has a human right to be angry or frustrated. He's not, you know, explosive by any means or anything like that. But any sign of anger from anyone, I will either want to run away and escape, or like my fight mode kicks in.
Yep. So this is what I mean, everybody, about the book. So she shares these things that are vulnerable, and yet we all, I can relate to what you're saying. This is how trauma can affect you if you've been traumatized as a child. And so honestly, when you share those things, it's validating for a lot of people. Sorry to interrupt you. You were saying that when he gets angry, it can be very triggering for you. And you were saying your response could be to fight or to run.
Or to fantasize about living alone with cats. I've never had a cat, but I start, and when throughout our entire marriage, I've been this way, but when I was younger, I believed it. I believed this isn't the right marriage for me. I should be single. He's not the right man for me. I didn't understand that in that moment, what's happening is I'm being triggered. I'm not feeling safe because anger, which the mind and the nervous system don't always speak to each other. So like the way that my body feels and the way what I know in my head don't align. Like I know my husband is not going to hurt me. I know he's not scream at me.
Yeah.
That he will, by the end of the day, we will have worked all this out and we'll be fine. But my body is like remembering my dad or my mom.
Of course. It's hard. And that is part of living with complex trauma and healing complex trauma. That is the experience of it. It is. Our parts get triggered. And when you're in a relationship like that, we often see our spouses or our partners as we may have seen our mother or father. And they the same way. So it's like you can be really, it's complicated. I think the best thing to do that I find is in the moment, because like you said it yourself, our prefrontal cortex, our thinking brain is gone at that point when we're triggered and we can't logically think it through or even say the things we want to say. So often just like leaving until we are a little bit calmer and then our thinking brain can come back on and then coming together. That's ideal. Not that we do that all the time. So I think that it's absolutely amazing that you have created this life for yourself. It just goes to show, I know we don't like to hear the word resilience. That's what I see within you, even if you don't feel it, because you keep on taking the next step, moving forward, even if you feel like it's painful or am I standing still? And I think that's incredible. I mean, I highly recommend your book to people. If you are a trauma survivor, this is a book that will help validate your own experiences. It did for me, but also maybe if you're married to someone who is a survivor, or you want someone to maybe understand what your internal experience is like because you don't have the words for it, give them Kelly's book because she's got the words for it. And it's really something. There's your little girl on the cover. That also got me because that's actually you on the cover. And I wanted to grab her and take her to my house because I raised two little girls. They're twins and I adored them. And I wanted to grab you and take you. And so I'm so sorry that you got the message of shame because I would swallow you. Sorry, that's how I talk about cute things. Swallow, eat, because you were just perfect and precious. And I'm sorry that you were harmed by people who had no business being parents and complex trauma and generational trauma and all of that. I'm glad that you're here today sharing your story. I feel like that's part of even with the podcast, all of us having now a voice to talk. So I'm so glad that you're talking now, that you're sharing your story. We are listening and we are validating and we are affirming you. And I know that your book will touch many people in so many different ways. And I'm really proud of you.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.